Well, I have a confession to make. Despite the widespread wailing about the demise of TVNZ's Sunday programme due to costs and restructure at the state broadcaster, I, for one, won't miss it. Now, to be clear, my sympathies are with the personnel who have lost their jobs. That's always a major upheaval and stressful, and I genuinely wish them the best in finding another job, be it in the media sector or perhaps somewhere completely new. But I won't miss Sunday as a programme. For too long, I've watched coverage of important social issues with a bias that's got my blood pressure boiling, which is part of the reason why I don't watch it now. Let me give you some examples. So in 2022, the Sunday programme tried to link the severe shortage of medical staff in our strained and neglected health system in New Zealand with the long overdue overturning of Roe v. Wade. Yep, a failing health system and abortion. They travelled to the US to search out a few, well, that's because that's all there were, a few pro-abortion American medical professionals who just couldn't wait to get to New Zealand, apparently because we have such a liberal abortion law.
Never thought they would take away women's rights or autonomy.
This is illegal, and you're a lawbreaker.
Over their body. Never thought that would happen. Never, never, never.
Please, make him stop.
God gave you that baby.
Abortion bans over half the country.
You're stuck with that pregnancy until the state decides that it's okay for it to be out of your body.
Please help us to end the violent killing by abortion.
Is the pain of America's abortion debate New Zealand's gain?
This was the final straw and their reason to come to New Zealand.
My plan is to leave the country. I think my soul needs a break, honestly.
So here we go.
Sundays on the front line.
So we wear bulletproof vests in the clinic. It has been flooded, it's been car bombed.
Does it sometimes feel like you're at war?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Nurses, obstetricians, gynecologists, American specialists are making a choice.
They're terrified at work, and I think they're looking for an out.
When would you like to see American nurses and doctors here?
Yesterday.
Patients in our ambulance bay, waiting for beds, and our resus is full.
You need them.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, it was a desperate and distorted misrepresentation of the facts. Ideology and the bias and the propaganda became the real story, and it certainly wasn't quality, balanced, investigated journalism as we all want and expect. I mean, have a watch of this short excerpt from the full program that highlights the hypocrisy and confusion of an abortion supporter. She tells us she's a pediatrician. Her favorite part is working with all the kids. Her oath is to do no harm. Why has the right to kill the unborn child been taken away?
What do you love about your job?
We have the sweetest, best patients. We have children that come here. So that's my favorite part, working with all the kids.
Marissa Coles is a Dallas pediatric nurse.
I'm not able to uphold the oath that I made of doing no harm and helping others.
That must be tough for a nurse.
Yeah. I just never thought they would take away women's rights or autonomy over their body. Never thought that would happen. Never, never, never.
But when they did, it came as a shock.
I feel uncomfortable talking about it.
Yeah, real shock. The whole story only pushed one narrative, the overturning of Roe v. Wade being bad, bad, bad. But the exciting thing is that New Zealand can gain all these pro-abortion, confused medical professionals who don't understand biology and conception. Now, in that same year, there was an episode on drug testing. And here's what the program showed. Firstly, there was the cop.
If you're going to choose to use drugs, here are some ways you can help to keep yourself a little bit more safe.
Oh, yeah, okay. Always good to have a cop saying that. And then there was the drug testers themselves.
This is how to do it safely.
Critics say there aren't enough of them. But when it comes to safety, legalised drug testing clinics have been a game changer.
I've taken something bad and it's not good. So yeah, know your stuff, eh?
If we are gonna do drugs, we do obviously test them because we don't want to accidentally take meth or something.
I wouldn't have taken what I took tonight if it didn't come from a friend who had tested it before.
What they didn't cover in the program is the fact that drug testing involves playing Russian roulette with drugs and that there is no such thing as a safe drug. And then there was the program in 2021 on puberty blockers. But this wasn't an investigation. This was a further pushing of the media's own narrative and bias on the transgender issue. In the promo, it says, two families, two children who want to change. Sunday follows the brave, very personal journeys of two young people and their parents as they transition to become who they feel they are meant to be. Now, as predicted, they didn't talk to pediatricians who are raising the red flag, and there are many of them, or refer to any of the research which is calling into questions the current trend of treatment of children suffering gender dysphoria. Nope, they spoke to a transgender-affirming doctor who is part of WPATH, the World Professional Association for Transgender Health, the organisation that's just been exposed for the promotion of pseudoscientific surgical and hormonal experiments.
So that's where puberty blockers can be helpful.
A medical intervention.
Puberty blockers, they turn off the sex hormone production. And by doing that, it stops puberty moving forwards.
And are they reversible?
So yeah, absolutely.
Even the Ministry of Health has backed off the statement that they're fully reversible, and there are some unknowns. Now, Sunday doesn't talk to, for example, a doctor on the other side of the debate. For example, Dr. William Malone.
So it's often said that puberty blockers are reversible, but this, I think, is disingenuous on multiple levels. So the first is that the majority of children who are started on puberty blockers, over 95%, go on to take cross-sex hormones. Because they are the first step in sequential treatment pathway, puberty blockers cannot be considered a standalone intervention. So the way the Endocrine Society breaks this down, they state very clearly that estrogen for males carries a very high risk of blood clots and then a moderate risk of breast cancer, heart disease, stroke, gallstones, and elevated triglycerides, which are a type of cholesterol. And then right from the same document, they list the risks of testosterone for females, very high risk of thickening of the blood, and then a moderate risk of severe liver dysfunction, heart disease, stroke, high blood pressure, and breast or uterine cancer.
Yeah, now see, we watched the program with a professor in pediatrics from Australia, Dr. John Whitehall, and you can watch his analysis as we bring some much needed balance to this issue. Dr. Whitehall says, quote, I don't know of any greater intervention in the brain and the body than puberty blockers. And this truth is all starting to become undeniable. But at the time, Sunday didn't want to go anywhere near it. It wasn't an investigation of the issue. And then in 2019, there was surrogacy with a gay couple, a Labor MP at that, and he's in a same-sex relationship. He uses an egg donor and then uses a different gestational surrogate. The surrogate has had three children through anonymous sperm donor. And one of the men, not the politician, is the biological father. Yeah, I'm confused as well.
Gay male is not easy. For starters, biology is not on this side.
Because between us both, we don't have the bits that it takes.
So Tarmati and Tim needed to find an egg to fertilise and a surrogate to carry it.
So which comes first, the chick or the egg? Which one did come first?
The surrogate came first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Natasha and I'm the surrogate.
There are strict rules. It takes a special person to be a surrogate.
Basically write off a year of their life so that they can carry for you. And that's a huge commitment for anybody.
It's selfless, eh?
It's really selfless.
Yeah. You tie my hair. Where's the hairbrush?
Three children from a sperm donor, Natasha's paying it forward.
Pretty. Yeah. It's my one-in-a-lifetime thing I'll do. So thank you for my babies.
You sing it.
So someone gave me a donation and I got free children out of it, and it just felt wrong to carry on and not stop and give back.
Perfectly on time.
I expect that they will be 100% honest with the child about where it's come from.
Danae got busy producing eggs.
I can't remember the exact number, but I had something like 40 something eggs come out at once.
31 eggs.
But 14 that made it. We've got 14.
Oh, yeah.
We've got 14 in the freezer.
7 eggs fertilised by Tarmati and 7 by Tim. One of those was placed into Natasha, and it grew.
Can I just go for it?
Yeah. Some interesting statements in that media story, though. It said while she loved and nurtured the baby in the womb like any mum would, she felt that both herself and the baby knew they would be parting ways. She breastfed the baby for the first 48 hours, but unusually after this, he would not feed again, and the family instead switched him to formula. He just kind of weaned himself off me. It was like he was ready. We have become so close, it's such an intimate process. But the question that nobody, including Sunday program, was asking was, should we be making surrogacy and sperm donation easier? What's it like to find out that your true biological mother's only involvement in your life was a donation of the egg? How do you deal with the feeling of loss and rejection from your carrying mother, who's labelled as your gestational carrier? Is it normal that when you see someone who resembles you, you wonder if they're related? Can you be blamed for feeling disturbed that some money or a contract may have been involved in your conception? And what if the biological parent or parents don't want any contact? Well, Sunday didn't want to talk about that. They certainly didn't ask any questions like that. It was all about the rights of the parents, a puff piece for surrogacy for gay couples. That's not investigation. That's pushing a narrative. And then there was the program on fertility. And Sunday says in the promo, making babies, it's what many people believe we were put on this earth to do, but our earth is hurting. In the face of climate change uncertainty, some young Kiwis are saying no to creating a new generation. A story that'll make you think. And so it starts with a lesbian couple who are panicking about the environment.
A baby fennec was on the cards.
We were having fertility tests done, you know, we were planning to have a baby, and it just was, you know, perfectly / tragically aligned with me beginning the process into this climate crisis world. And the further deep down each of those pathways, the more panicked I was, and the more I just felt like this was just something we couldn't do.
Yeah, I genuinely am a neurosis. I haven't had one. Have you?
Is it more fearing for the future life that your hypothetical child would have, or is it the carbon footprint that it would have?
The reality of, you know, what their life might be like in 10, 20, 30 years' time. That played a significant part in our decision to probably shift away from ever considering to have a family.
Food insecurity, power insecurity, and then that kid would also be confronted with its own role in that. Have you
Oh dear, the next generation. There's only one problem. Well, two actually. One is a biological reality, which I'm sure you can figure out given the nature of the relationship. But the second is that they don't want to create the next generation. And then there was another example that Sunday program highlighted.
The more output, clothing and food waste, all that sort of stuff that comes along with it, the energy generally that they're going to be utilizing as one person. But I think people really want an answer about why you're not having them. Whereas it's like now it should kind of be going the other way, maybe.
Is there any kind of tangible change that could happen that would make you comfortable with having your own children?
I can't see it where we are right now. Yeah, I don't think there really is anything that could change my mind.
Yeah, the energy that another child will use. Now, I'm not sure if there's a father on the scene, but, you know, there's so much fear, so much climate alarm. So nothing can be done to change things, despite constant conferences and changes and banning of things, which is interesting, isn't it? And then they interviewed the expert, Sophie from Canberra, part of the ACT government, the Commissioner for Sustainability and the Environment.
Houses, people who've lost their lives. They are people who are loved, people who are valuable.
A human cost and a human cause.
Even though we might not think, oh, well, my shirt's got a carbon footprint, every time we're spending money, really, there's a greenhouse gas emission associated with that. They were manufactured in a factory that had to be powered, and then they had to be transported. They might have traveled by air, they might have traveled by boat, they had to be stored in a warehouse, they had to be stored in the shop with the lights running.
And more humans means more consumers.
What is the single worst thing an individual can do for their carbon footprint?
Yeah, so I think that when you look at all the figures, the worst thing that anyone can do for their individual carbon footprint is actually have a child. So compared to all the other changes that we can make in our lifestyle about how we travel or what we eat, it's really having a child that perpetuates that carbon emission and that carbon footprint for decades to come.
Yeah, that message certainly fits the climate activist narrative, doesn't it? The worst thing you can do for the environment is have a child. But next minute, Sophie actually has two children.
Beautiful, sensitive girl. She's also extremely sassy. She's quite the firecracker.
Yeah, and then up our driveway.
And then her little brother Ash is a very happy, relaxed boy.
Yeah, now that's interesting. I say good on her, but doesn't that make her a hypocrite? A bit like world leaders gathering for a climate change panic conference arriving in private jets. So once again, Sunday program has pushed a climate alarmism narrative, but a one-sided one, that we shouldn't have children, and their own experts either counter that or don't follow their own advice. It's actually hilarious. And then last year, it was babies. And the promo said, a boy or a girl, it's usually been quick and easy for parents to describe their newborn baby, but a growing group of mums and dads are embracing what is known as gender creative parenting. These parents are deliberately keeping the sex of their babies top secret because they say the children themselves should be free to decide as they grow up who they are. They're a new generation being raised not as baby boys or baby girls, but as babies. And it was actually from 60 Minutes Australia, so they repeated it. Let me just show you a few clips to show you the narrative that they were pushing.
If Bertie is a he or a she, or anything else for that matter, Bertie is a they-be. Because when Amy was pregnant, she and Danny made a controversial decision.
So why did you decide to let a child choose their own gender?
The experience of having raised Evie and what we saw happen to Evie and the assumptions that were put on Evie as a girl were things that we weren't that comfortable with.
I said to Danny, are we going to tell people the sex of Bertie or the baby that we haven't yet had? And Danny was, you know, quite unequivocal.
Yes, I said no. I said let's just not tell people.
Oh, lovely. And then to our expert, a gender studies academic from the University of Utah, the guru, apparently.
We're not trying to eliminate gender. We're actually trying to show how limitless gender can be, right? And just really helping kids find their own path to it and follow their lead so that they feel comfortable and authentic.
In America, someone who knows how it's done is gender creative parenting guru and social scientist Dr. Kyle Myers. 7 years ago, Kyle and her Australian husband Brent had their first baby, Zuma.
Yay, Zuma! Yay!
We didn't assign a gender at birth, and we didn't disclose Zuma's reproductive anatomy to people who didn't need to know. The reproductive anatomy that my kiddo was born with, I didn't want to assign too many labels and assumptions and, you know, destinies on top of that.
You can't tell what your gender is by looking at your body. Gender is something you feel on the inside.
Kyle has become the poster person for this unconventional parenting style, writing a best-selling book about her own experience.
So you believe that if you're born with a penis, doesn't necessarily make you a boy?
Right, right, because so a lot of people who are born with penises identify as a boy, and a lot of people who are born with vulvas identify as a girl. A big part of that is because they're assigned the boy and girl labels, right, and are socialized as such.
Isn't that confusing for a little child?
I think yes. It's actually more confusing to make children think that what the 8 billion people on the planet all neatly fit into one of two boxes.
So the investigation wasn't about harms or problems for young people or whether this trend is driven by bonkers and not by biology. One-sided coverage, marketing of a phenomenon with no balance to the argument. And then in 2022, there was coverage of the euthanasia issue.
Okay. Right, I'm good to go.
Action?
Action.
Hi, I'm Esther. I'm 58 years old. I am dying of cancer, and by the time you see this, I won't be here. I know it's going to be hard for some people to see, but this is my story and my journey and my choice.
Now, following the program, they had an online discussion, but it was with two supporters of the law. One palliative care doctor that I know said of the Sunday program, quote, New Zealand society has to be fed the best heartwarming stories for the license to kill they endorsed at the ballot box. All systems must positively reinforce the state's sanctioning of killing, because the state and the people are codependent and enmeshed. End quote. Sadly, so true. But Defend NZ, who have campaigned against the euthanasia law, put out an analysis raising a number of concerns about the program and about the measurement of unbearable suffering. You see, when that woman first applied for the approval of assisted suicide, she was denied as she didn't meet the unbearable suffering eligibility. But a trip to the doctor a few months later, and the decision was reversed. And the program also highlights that the presenter had her own conscience pricked days before the woman's death. The journalist recorded a conversation ensuring it was on record Esther didn't feel pressured to follow through with assisted suicide due to the filming of the feature for the Sunday program. And that's the same type of question that doctors have to use to prove whether there's any coercion, you know, sort of like a phone call from a reporter. That doesn't sound very accurate, does it? And the thing that you wonder about this program is how much pressure, or could she have changed her mind, but in the process wrecked the whole premise of the program? In other words, was she under coercion to follow through? And so with such weak safeguards to prevent elderly and disabled being abused, it means that these warm cases that the media highlight can lead to manipulation of the vulnerable. So once again, very one-sided coverage, no dissenting view, no experts on the panel afterwards who would argue against euthanasia. It's simply pushed one narrative. And finally, they also examined conversion therapy. Now, it was one of the worst examples of journalism involving hidden cameras, entrapment, and coming to a conclusion that most viewers would not have naturally come to, but it suited the activists. What we saw was undercover reporters deliberately misleading counsellors and covert filming of the conversation in an attempt to show conversion therapy in action. But what we didn't see was conversion therapy, as they would define it. There was no coercion, no ice baths, no electric shocks. We simply saw counsellors working with people according to their stated desire, which the counsellors assumed were genuine, but they weren't. The Broadcasting Standards Authority said that the public interest outweighed privacy, confidentiality, and entrapment. It was all about a campaign and pushing a narrative. It was media at another low. Now, I'm sure there's been some very good stories on the Sunday program, but when it has come to key social issues around the family, it has always worked hard to push a radical social engineering narrative, not presenting the debate, but generally pushing a one-sided view. Euthanasia, abortion, conversion therapy, surrogacy, transgendering children with puberty blockers, drug testing, saving the environment by not having the babies, and theybies. And of course, it's an anti-family narrative, little balance, pro-abortion, pro-euthanasia, pro-conversion therapy bans, pro-transing of the children, pro-surrogacy, pro-drug testing, pro-don't have babies for the sake of the environment, and the one-sided bias narrative being rammed down our throats. And those are just the ones that I saw. As I said, I'm sorry for the personnel. I wish them well. But no, I won't miss TVNZ's Sunday program. I actually believe it's part of the reason that trust in the media is reaching new lows. And as I've always said, we deserve better.